going on? Rob and Rich are the kings of con.
Live from Fartoon Studios and wherever Rich is, it's Kings of Con, the podcast. This week's guests,
Kings of Con.
Rick Gomez and Steve Zahn. Part two.
Well, you know, it's great that you guys, you know, came away having met each other, right? I mean, there's...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I
think that's always nice when the sort of the disappointment of a show not going, but you walk away going, oh, well, here's this guy. And so you're now working together. You have kind of a production company that you've started?
Yeah. We sort of followed through on a promise that we made during the Crossing thing. And the way it kind of timed out on the calendar was like one of those really unfortunate spots where we were a mid-season and we were held until the next cycle. So we didn't know if we were going to get picked up until, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
we were on the clock for so long, and then they went, no, you're not going. So Steve and I kept in touch, and we were like, well, we talk every once in a while and go, have you heard anything? No, it doesn't look like it's going to go. It's not going to go. Da, da, da. And then finally we were released from all that madness and we were like, okay, let's make a promise to do something together. And so I wrote this short film and Steve came up to the house and we shot it in 3 days. We had a blast. We loved this thing. We loved doing it. We loved working together on it. He's, you know, just one of my favorite actors around. And then that short kind of created a conversation about where you could take that short and how you can maybe make it into something else and create more either episodes or films that are attached to it. And so that became this thing called An Uncandid Portrait, which we are world premiering at Tribeca in a month, June 13th.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's fantastic.
So we're world premiering June 13th at Tribeca. Come and check us out. We're live. They're doing live events. We're going to be outdoors at the Brooklyn Metro Tech. You know, there's like COVID pods outside, but they're doing live events, which is awesome. And yeah, man. So we're going to be there. We're going to do that. And then we're planning to shoot a film in October. We're out trying to raise money for that right now, and we're in development on another feature film with our buddy Jason Reed, who actually was the producer on that TV show.
No really. Exactly. He was the producer, Jason Reed. He's a huge producer. And yeah, so that's full circle,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah, it all works together. Well, God does happen for a reason, right? I mean,
yeah.
We all got along, all three of us.
The fucking show, and now he's our new partner on a movie. It's so
no,
great.
We're not bad. No, I mean, it got canceled. How easy? How hard is it?
No,
I bet he wasn't the composer. I mean, that guy took a beating
in
this podcast.
No, the composer was 8, so she has to learn a lot before she gets up to the place.
So now the premiere at Tribeca. So, and I've seen the film you're talking about, Rick, is the fireworks character.
Yes, fireworks are.
And that's such a great short. It's such a clever.
We're really proud of it. And then we did a second one, Rich, with Rosemary DeWitt, who is Ron Livingston's wife, but is also, and so a dear friend of all of ours. That's the only reason I say that, but is a fantastic actress in her own right. Did you see that one, Richie?
Am I giving away to tell you? Yes, I saw that one. It's fantastic. Has Elliot featured heavily?
Yes. My son Elliot was in that one.
Oh, cool.
And so is daughter. Audrey Zahn. He's the main dancer in that one.
Dancer.
Yeah.
Steve, it's a great, real quick. That's also great. So are these paired together? Is there, they screen together as part of the festival?
Yeah, so we did this thing where we built some titles and we did this and we call it An Uncandid Portrait. And now I've written, Steve and I have kind of brainstormed on how, 5 more episodes. We actually think that we could go make more. They're just these little mockumentary art films, and they're completely nonsensical and funny and sometimes really melancholic, and sometimes really strange, and sometimes really beautiful. And our third one is in French. It's black and white, and it stars Fabian Frankel, who is now the lead on the new Game of Thrones. He's the new Game of Thrones guy.
Wow.
So we got lucky on the having three awesome actors be the leads in each one of the shorts that are now these episodes, and now we've kind of got a roadmap. And Tribeca's been super supportive, and so Steve and I just got we started to just get busy, and you know, Jason came to us and said, I can't stop thinking about the shorts, and you know, what do you guys have? And we had just talked about this idea.
He actually kind of. He asked us for something that we were working on for like a week or two.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And we were like, dude, we're this is
working
so
on
bad.
It. Yeah.
We have something for you.
Wow. Yeah.
And he freaked out.
How long is each short?
Each short's about 15 minutes. 15. Yeah.
And will they air, again, will they air all sort of like, they're stitched together as one giant short, essentially. Like,
right. No, they are actually titled and have episode like so. There's
right, but
one,
they're going to run together
three.
In a group.
They're
going to
run
guess.
Together in a group. Yeah, right.
I can tell you, I've seen all three of them, and they're fantastic. And I'll remember I'm glad you mentioned being funny, Rick, and then I'm glad you dipped into the melancholy, because one thing that really struck me about the pieces, and I walked into them cold. You know, you sent me a link, say, hey, give this a watch, and. I know your sensibilities for comedy, and I've been a fan of Steve's for years. I know his sensibilities. So I'm watching this thinking I'm going to be seeing just comedy 101, like right at you. And it's so heartfelt and beautiful, like just that one alone. And the way you tell that story, the way you show the home movies on the barn wall, like the film craft on display is so excellent. It's just great to see it.
I appreciate that a ton, dude, and it, that comes from somebody that I respect a ton as a storyteller and as a director and as a filmmaker yourself, and you and I have worked on stuff together too, so I know that means a lot to me for you to say that. I am so incredibly proud of all three of them, but I'm No Holiday, which is the first one, it was the standalone short, really was. It was a really special thing and launched Steve and I being able to have conversations about what you know, what you don't know, where the magic comes from. And I know it's like, it's easy to say this and you kind of get caught up in stuff. You know, we all have been acting for so long. Everybody, you know, Tina, are you an actress?
I'm a producer.
She's a producer.
She's a producer. The four of us, not Tina.
Yeah, not Tina.
She's not in the group. Have been doing
beardless.
It for so beardless. We've been doing it for so long, right? That you kind of go like, yeah, it's good. I mean, Rich, there's stuff that you do in the week that makes me howl, and I just think it's pitch perfect on so many levels. And we go, yeah, okay, next scene. Like, you just got to do it. But there was something about I'm No Holiday and the way that Steve understood the sadness of that character and wasn't afraid to be like, yeah, he's funny, but he's also going to break your heart. Because when you find out how alone he is, it's going to really not feel right. And he just was it was so perfect. It really built, it became the building blocks by which we could have every other conversation that we've had to this point about a bunch of other creative projects.
Right,
so you know when something works, when it points to something, it's that where you're headed.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like you're leading the shot, right? So
Rick wrote this incredibly dense but very kind of cool little story. It was just a bunch of moments. And I understood those moments individually. I felt like I did.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what it meant as a whole, but I didn't care because I trusted. There's this incredible trust that we have with each other. Like, we'll just have an idea and we'll go, that's a great idea. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no agenda. We just want to work.
Right.
Make things with people we love or people who inspire us. You know, have a company of people that are not afraid to fail.
Yeah,
right.
And Holiday was such a I needed that so bad.
Mm.
It was like after doing a show and fighting about stupid shit, to be able to go and be free and to create a character and put on some glasses and totally kind of morph into somebody and totally trust the people around you, the minimal crew of five people and just create great stuff. I mean, it sounds corny, but God, man, that's why I do it.
Yeah. 100%. You know? Yeah.
And if we can do that and we can keep creating things that are marketable and mm-hmm. we can make money.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to make a buck.
Sure.
But I don't know. It's really exciting,
that's,
you know, to create a family.
Yeah, it's inspiring to hear you talk about it. It reminds me, Rich, a little bit of when we first became friends in a similar way. We'd been auditioning together, knew each other sort of from audition rooms, but then finally sort of connected. And then we created something together, which was Kings of Khan. And that was sort of sealed the deal. Like we had a shorthand and we creatively saw things the same way. And right. It feels good, and you get more inspired. You're like, oh shit, I'm not by myself here. I got a compatriot,
and when I first saw that, oh sorry, Rich.
Well, I'm saying I brought you in on that, Rick, because for the same thing that Steve said. It's like, and when you do these things, you want people around.
When you showed me the first cut of that thing, I remember sitting in your office at the house, which that's where you are now, right? You're at the house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you sat me in the back room. You're like, hey, I'm watching. It's 4 minutes of me and Rob in this thing. And I remember watching that first cut of that thing. You're like, I'm just getting the cut together. You know, I just want to get your eyeballs on it. And I remember going like, oh my God, the chemistry between you and Rob is perfect. Like, it's like you instantly know when something works. You just go, that's supposed to be together. And Steve and I have been on camera and we fucked around and did those face deal things where we sold shit on on YouTube. so we'll be on camera together for different stuff, but if there's something that really works inside the creative process of now, it's sort of morphed into this thing where we really are putting the spotlight out and going like, hey man, you know who this might be for? It might be for that guy that we both know and that we both love. And then we go to them and go, does this resonate? You know, Uncandid Portraits become this thing now that gets circulated between our friends who don't even tell us that they're sending it to anybody else. And then hear from somebody else and they go, oh yeah, blah, 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 sent it to me. Fuck man. You know, like we didn't even send it. It got it to somebody else. And so that's what Steve and I get super excited about. Cause we're like, that's really what we want to do. And Rich, that's always what we wanted to do is it's what the week was. This always comes back to the same thing, which is, you have so much more fun in the environment that is yours and you're responsible for delivering it. There's a responsibility in what you're delivering and it becomes really meaningful. And if we can do that in a way, like Steve's saying, and still feed everybody who's on the cast and crew, well then we win. So that's what we're trying. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, owning your own art, for lack of a better term, and then, you know, going back to you guys talking about the shitty music cues of The Crossing, then those decisions are your own. Then you're hanging your hat on the moment. So if somebody says, I felt like that scene was too long, and your response is, I think you should go fuck yourself. I think it's perfect. It's the scene,
right,
we wanted, and it's the scene the way it should be.
Yeah.
Right.
Unlike the machine that has 9,000 cooks in the kitchen going, poke, poke, poke.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah,
it goes to the editing machine.
Yeah.
And it goes through a process that's like every other show they do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a cut and it's cut and it's cut and it's close up and it's close up and it's close up.
Yeah.
You never see two characters talking in the same frame ever.
Right.
And then if you ask any of those people, what's your favorite movie? Give me five favorite movie. Give me five awesome movies that you just like love watching. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, I love Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, and I love Midnight Cowboy and then they always try to be like a little more than, they're not going to say Shawshank. They're going to say like, you know, like The Last Detail. I love that. Every shot in that movie, there's like four close-ups in the whole damn movie.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Totally.
I mean, and they're really drunk, like hanging out in a room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just turned the camera on and just sat down and let them go.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yet I don't understand that. And then you watch a show and you're like, stop it.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You're driven by, right now, you two guys are driven by telling the stories you want to tell. And everybody at a major network is driven by fear. And that's a different way to go into a process.
Yeah. And money and advertising money and shit like that, too.
But they're afraid. They're all afraid of, like, no, 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 we really need to say the character's name more. We got to be sure they understand the character, the lead character's name. And we got to be sure we go to the close-up, like, they really like to, I mean, we got to get right in. Good master, get it on two beats, and then be right in here. Like,
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what I did? On the last movie I did this movie down in New Orleans. And here was the battle. This.
The button on your shirt.
What?
And I would always go, no.
I don't want that button open.
This is, you know, this is cool. No, babe. You have to button the top. This one has to be buttoned.
Why?
It's in the rule book. It's in the rule book of this kind of movie. You have to, if you do that, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, it was insane. It drove me crazy. I was just like, no, this is going to stay open.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. That does create an environment.
Yeah. What are we thinking about here?
This is why we go do our own thing.
Yeah,
man.
It's an exciting triangulation on the screen in front of me right now, because Rob and I have explored that with our writing and our sharing the stage and sharing the screen. And I've done it with Rick.
Yes.
Because not only as an actor, but then Rick was the ultimate guinea pig for me and, you know, came and did America 101 for me, which was...
I have to show that to you, Steve. You should actually see that short. So Rick...
Oh, I'd love to see it.
Rich's directorial debut, like my directorial debut was Holiday. His was America 101, and I was the star of that. And I think I damn near broke his soul.
You did.
Probably the worst actor that could ever have done it.
I have quoted you, and I'm going to tell you what I say. I quote you all the time. First of all, we were great friends going into it, so already we had a shorthand, and your wife was on board, and even when your wife wasn't in a scene, she was hanging out playing with baby Frank, and like it was a family project. Yeah. Like we're all just kind of in it, doing our best. And I remember you and Jenny gave me like copious notes on the draft, and we changed scenes based on like hanging out in your kitchen. You know what I mean? It was great. But
it's great. I love that.
And then at one point Rick and I got in an argument. Like Rick was doing Justified at the same time. So I was cramming him into these. Steve, it's a monologue. I mean, it's a,
all
you know,
the short
it's
is
a
monologue. It's just,
the
a, whole, and I walk whole in and out of scenes just talking.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So awesome. Nobody else has dialogue but Rick. And so, and at one point Rick got pissed off. I got pissed off and I was totally out of line, and I got really hot under the collar, and Rick got hot under the collar, and we shot the scene, we shot the bit, and then I took a second, and I calmed down, and I said, and I went to Rick, and I'm like, I was totally out of line, man, and I apologize. The pressure's kind of getting to me. We got, you know, we're doing a lot in a little, and I'm trying to tell the exact thing I want to tell, and I just, my mistake, and I apologize. And Rick looked at me, he goes like, no problem. Apology accepted. And here's the deal. Take it as a lesson, because we're friends. You spout it off to me. I'm going to tell you to fuck off, and then I'm going to do the scene. But I actually think you're really good at this, and you're going to get hired to do it for money. And if you pull that shit on a set, someone's going to walk in their trailer and not come out, and you fuck for the day. So, my gift to you. And I've told that story nonstop, and it literally changed my entire approach to dealing with anything. Don't
great.
Let the pressure here become the pressure there. You know what I mean? Like, if you feel it, don't let it go there.
Yeah.
Figure out another way to deal with it.
I love you. I'm going to finish the scene. But the motherfucker you're on set with who doesn't love you, he ain't coming to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but sometimes you're working on a gig where you're like, oh, I wish someone would freak out and blow up. This is so boring. Somebody do something crazy. There's something. There's something about that you know, it's like when you go do a movie, they're like, oh, who are you working with? Oh, really? Yeah, they're crazy. Crazy, you better watch out for them. I always end up being great friends with them.
Right.
It's always those people, like, oh, they're out of their mind. It's like, oh, this is great. You know, like,
well, you got, you're Val the guy Kilmer. Who's got Pitbull
like
showing up
Val,
going.
Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
I'm like, I worked with him. He He was a genius. He was a genius, the funniest guy. He was crazy as a loon, but in a, such a great way.
Wow.
I absolutely loved him.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you.
Know, there's a ton of people like that.
Yeah.
But I like that energy, man.
Yeah.
There's something about that. That's gone. I look at some of these young actors right now and I go, God, man, I wish, you know, one thing I hate is being on set and I go like, ah, let's just shoot the rehearsal. And I'm like, no, I don't want to shoot the rehearsal. I want to rehearse. And then you can shoot it.
Right.
Let's rehearse it. Let's rehearse it for the camera guys. Let's rehearse it for the light guys so that he can come in and change stuff, not when we're shooting.
Yeah.
Let's rehearse it like we're shooting film.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And we have a limit, right? There's a mag and it's so long. Mm-hmm. And when we did film, everybody had to rehearse.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it saved time. Mm-hmm. Now, oh man. I you know, it worries me that there's not this kind of like, you know, it's like a marathon sometimes. It's just like, oh, it's a marathon every day. And I, you know, you want to go up to not everything is like this, but I'm just saying like there are a lot of things like this where you just go up to the producers and you're like, what is the business model here that you want people to be exhausted to the point of where they're so happy they just remember their lines.
Right.
That's
right.
Not acting.
No,
that's not telling stories.
Right. You're super old school though, and we talk about this all the time, Rich. Of like,
I am
being a part of this. Like, you know, Steve, and I brought the Uncanted Portrait stuff before it was even labeled all that, and we knew what it was to Getzman, and
all right.
Because Steve and I both know Gary. We came. We think that there's like a play towards
the same father.
Yeah. And you're in that same spot. Uncle. Yeah. Richie's in that same spot from band.
I know.
Yeah, I know. So it's like when you come from that play tone place as a young actor, you see this, like you get to work with the greatest of everybody who could be in a room all at once, from sound to camera to design to makeup to hair. It's just greatness across the board, and you go, and then everybody who's doing everything is just great. They're just great, and you go, this is kind of, these are masters doing their work, and you come from this place where you have to be prepared and you have to kind of pull your pants up and go, holy shit, mm-hmm. It's time to go to work, and this is going to be hard, or this is going to be, or lean on each other. There's a scene in Band of Brothers that I'm probably most famous for that Richie wrote for me. At the last second, I was like, what the fuck? This gag doesn't work. This thing, they want me to make fun of Reverend Horton, but this isn't funny. And Richie's like, why don't you say this dog ain't gonna, that dog ain't gonna hunt? And then we kind of did this Southern accent back and forth together. And we had this like jam session about it. And it turned into that scene with me making fun of Schwimmer. But like, you only do that. You're in the trenches trying to figure it out. Not because you're like, fuck it, dude. Just make sure the check clears and I'll just say whatever.
Yeah.
Where am I? Where's my mark? If Mattio's over there, okay, cool. And I thought I was gonna die if I didn't get that right.
Right.
I thought I would just drop dead on the earth. Now, you sort of build these bonds and you do this, and then you get and Sam Rockwell talks about this. You want so badly to not waste anyone's time. You just want to entertain people. You just don't want to waste their fucking time.
Right.
So then you,
even if you're just sitting there.
Yeah. Then you come prepared.
Make this interesting.
Yeah. And so Steve and I had this thing early on where he said to me, we were having a glass of wine. He's like, hey man, just so you know, there's a lot of shit that goes on now with folks. And like, people have sides in their hands constantly and stuff. I don't do that. I just want you to know I don't do that. And I'm like, neither do I. And he's like, fucking great. If you and I don't do that, then everyone's going to feel embarrassed who does.
Right.
Like, you should have known your fucking lines when you showed up to work that day. Don't hold your
stick. I didn't go out this weekend because I have
fucking
number
lines.
One on the call sheet.
Yeah.
And I got this killer apartment in Vancouver, like on the 40th floor looking over, like, you know, the harbor.
Yeah.
And, like, it was so expensive. My wife was like, what? And I said, no, I have to learn lines. That's all I'm doing. I'm not going out. I'm not playing pool.
Right.
I'm not jogging. I'm not doing anything.
Right.
So, yeah, but Rick and I made a point, and we always went, and sure enough, within a week of shooting, people would bring them on, but they would hide them.
Yeah, and they'd be embarrassed. They just wouldn't want them because we'd all do the scene and we'd sit there and they'd go, okay, let's read through it once. And everybody, and then see me and Steve would just go, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then other people would start to catch on. They'd be like, no, man, we don't do it. We do it. What can Steve do? And so, but it creates this thing that makes it feel like it's important to do your work. That the work's important and that the words are important and that what we do is meaningful instead of just kind of showing them going like, what did I can just burn it. It's digital. It's digital. Yeah. And that's what you're saying, Steve. It's like when there was a big mag that had to get changed.
Yeah.
You fucked up a scene. We were just talking about this the other day. How long is this podcast? Do we just keep
as
going?
As long as we want it to be.
Oh,
this is like our short film. We'll do it as long as we want it.
No, but so the end of my spiel is this.
Intermission.
Steve and I were just talking about the scene in The Graduate where Dustin Hoffman goes up and he starts laughing. He moves to the corner of the – he's with Mrs. Robinson and he moves to the wall. And he won't face her because he's lost his shit. And he was petrified of being fired. He tells that story. And he's like, I came up in theater where if you went up, they asked you to go home.
You were fucked, yeah.
You were fired. Mm-hmm. You don't go up. You don't think it's cute that you went up. There's a goddamn fucking scene that Tennessee Williams wrote that you better fucking get right, motherfucker. Right. And now, and so he's standing there and he's against the wall and he's like, Mrs. Robinson. And Nichols was like, he came up and he apologized profusely. And Nichols was like, dude, it's in the movie. That's in the movie. It's perfect. Don't worry about that. It's you moved with exactly the way it's in it. Let it go. It's fine. And Dustin, remember feeling like empowered. But now we kind of just feel like that's all we do. We just go like, what do I say? Right. You know, like nobody even acts anymore. They just go, let me do it again. 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 So when it's
so concerning.
Let me do it again. You never get.
And you have to invite people. You have to say like, let's read through this. I did this on this movie. I did up in Toronto like a couple months ago, and the first day I had my son and I was like, hey, do you want to go through the scene? And he was like, what? I was like, let's run the scene for me, man, for me. He was like, oh yeah, okay. Do the lines. Just do the lines. Let's just do them like three times. And then the producer, not the producer, the first came up to me like later on, like a half hour later, he was like, hey man, that's awesome that you did that. And I was like, did what? Like that you took him aside and rehearsed. That's awesome. And I was like,
the fuck?
What is happening, man? Like, are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah, like, it's crazy.
You know, I don't think, and I know everything you're saying, and I think there are, maybe it's generational, I don't know, but there is sort of a level of actors not giving a shit. But there's also, and Steve hit on it earlier, there's also an untenable process in television where if you're number one, number two, number three in a call sheet, you're almost asking the impossible. Like you said, you're fighting so much against exhaustion, and you finished last night's episode, which was a different episode at 2 a.m. Now you're back, different director, and you're going, I yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's not about not giving a shit. Is that the process? It beats you up. In COVID, in October, I directed an episode of Lucifer, which is a show I've directed before, but now it was COVID rules. They had shortened the script. I think they had mandatory short scripts, like 42 pages. And they had mandatory ninth day. And they had mandatory 10 hours.
Wow.
And we had to wear masks and we had to do all this stuff, which would slow you down. And it was the best experience I've had in television just about. And so did the crew. The crew, as we're all backing away with our shields and masks, the DP was like, I see my kids every morning. I see my kids every night.
Yeah.
They showed up to work. Happy to be there, not feeling excited. Like they got hit by a train, and they came off another episode. I didn't. I'm showing up fresh. They're showing up oddly fresh because they've only been doing 10. Maybe if things go crazy and all goes pear-shaped, you're doing an 11-hour day. Not 14, 14, 14, 14, 14, 14, 14.
It's insane.
Yeah.
And you're not shooting scenes that are going to hit the cutting room floor. When you're shooting, when you're cut, when the editor gives you a cut, and it's 68 minutes long. And you're like, this is a 48-minute show.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
like yeah. we wasted 2 days of shooting.
Yeah.
You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah. Figure it out.
So yeah. COVID yeah. really helped, I think. Like in yeah, a way, yeah, yeah. COVID almost maybe not even retract because of the digital thing C brought up and you brought up, Rick, where it's like ones and zeros, man. Nobody cares. Just shoot it. We'll see if you need it later. But that you sacrifice a lot when you do.
You
that.
Do. You do.
Although it does suck rehearsing in COVID times because you're masked on that side on Lucifer, masked, you're double masked and you're like rehearsing the scene like this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That kind of blew.
And if you're deaf as a doornail like I am, and you got yeah. actors with a shield and a mask, and you're wearing a shield, they're like, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, no notes. Let's mask off and
you
shoot it, because I have no idea what you're saying.
Yeah.
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 I think the other thing I sent Rick this. I was doing this movie, and I got my, under my door, because I was telling him I want hard copies of stuff because I still have a Trapper Keeper yeah. with like, you know, colored things on there.
Yep.
Sean Cassidy on the cover, I assume.
Yep.
Yeah, good.
The cover. Revealed. and it was double pink.
What?
Double pink.
I don't know if I've gotten a double pink.
I don't think I've ever. When it got to tan, I was like, tan?
Yeah.
What's tan?
Okay, we may need yeah. to explain this yeah, level yeah. of
to our listeners.
Nuance,
yeah.
Right, so when you rewrite, there is a code, there is a certain, there's
color code.
The white script is a color code, right? So the first script, your first is white. Mm-hmm. And then it starts changing color, mm-hmm. and you know, like, oh, we're in the blue. Right. We're this is a new or revised script.
And then it gets to goldenrod.
That's right.
Right. Goldenrod.
You're down the road.
And goldenrod's like, you know, okay, well, we're at the goldenrod. Yeah, that's yeah. the shooting script.
Right.
And then if you go through all the colors, you go to double.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
You're at like a double.
Yeah.
Double you're getting blue. Rewrites constantly.
Double goldenrod.
So,
Double Rod, which is a movie you don't want to Google. You know, it's a very different.
Double Goldenrod is not the movie you want to Google.
No, that's a bunch of indecisive people. But I remember saying once, like, okay, well, you rewrote this scene so many times that I've worked on, and you know the original, and this maybe the next two I worked on. Like I read it 100 times, like. And you guys are changing a line that I got it, man. I'm going to surprise you.
Yes. Right.
The first time, the first line was awesome. I was going to pause, break it up, and then forget what I was saying and then finish it. And you were just thinking about the words and what they meant to say. And I had put that into my character. But now I don't have that opportunity anymore. So now I'm just gonna go with the jokes, I guess.
Right.
Knock
right.
knock.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't understand that either.
Yeah.
And that is a misunderstanding or a total of the acting process. They just go, well, they just a bunch of dummies, or they don't care. They're just getting their checks.
Or it's that
fear that's thing. What it feels
yeah,
like.
Yeah, but it's that fear thing we were talking about too, where Rob, you talked about this. It's a thing of like, is it good enough? Pink pages. Make it more clear. Yellow pages. More clear. Double white. Double blue. You know, you get to a point where you're explaining shit on top of explaining shit on top of explaining shit. And you're like, and that's why something like that's yours that you go, I'm not even sure that I fully understand all of that, but I feel like that was beautiful. Is really special. Like, right, it's great yeah. watching stuff that just... Yeah. takes you by surprise.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of TV doing that right now. There's a lot of really good TV on right now. And there's, us human beings know how to make cool shit. But mm-hmm. I think you have to keep, you know, you have to keep the sensors up to make sure you're not falling into those traps, even when you're doing it. Even mm-hmm. when you're doing it, when
right.
you're responsible for it. You mm-hmm. know, because it's a really great point. It's... Like, don't do 14-hour days, because 10-hour days are just way more fruitful. And then... You know, I remember being taught very early on, you know, as a young actor, like, it might be fun for you to have to run through that scene again. One more for me, because you feel a little insecure about whatever. But like, there's a crew guy who wants to have dinner with his wife. Is your performance that off base that you need it? Because think about all of the time it takes now. And then let's say you do that one, and then Cheryl over here goes, yeah, but that wasn't as good for me. Now you have a bunch of actors that want to get it right, which we all know can be that's its own shit show. I've been with brilliant actors who go like that, and that was garbage. And I'm like, garbage, man. It's brilliant. What just happened in this room, I just left and we were doing, and it was all that. So I remember having a first AD that said to me, like, you know, be mindful, take your time, do your shot, get it. If you want to need the scene again, get the scene again. But be mindful that costs somebody a dinner. Be mindful that it costs somebody a Valentine's Day. Be
it doesn't
mindful
happen
that
in
it's
a
like,
vacuum, you know.
No, it doesn't happen in a vacuum.
No, so over prepare.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
So over prepare.
Over prepare and undershoot, out of, as they say.
Out of complete fear, just over prepare.
Yes. Yeah.
And then if you have to do it 10 times, you got to do it 10 times.
Yeah.
But I love it when you're working with people that you jive with and you rehearse it and you do two takes. That's great. Awesome. Done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Moving on. Because a lot of times if you do a ton of takes, I think instinctually I fall into this trap. I go like, wow, take five was really good. That was really interesting. No, it was interesting to me because I just changed it.
Right. Mm.
And it was interesting in my head that I changed it and it was different from what my instincts were, which were right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's the same as comedies. In comedies, it's like, it's great if no one laughs because usually you're doing things out of sequence and everything. And what's really funny is the situation or whatever. It's not you tripping and farting, you know, but that's what you get to
funny.
When you do
it was a pretty
15
good
takes. You start making up stuff,
right? Yeah.
You know, and then it's about doing the funny line, making the joke.
Yeah. No, a lot of times the first or second take are the best, the freshest.
Yep.
I love that.
Yeah.
Like Clint Eastwood, he would love me. Be like, great. Yeah. One take McClanahan.
Yeah.
Werner Herzog was like that.
Yeah.
Werner would do like, we'd do a big scene, like a major scene, like a 3-minute scene, like, and he would just do this.
Wow.
Like the person, and we did one take.
Wow.
Wow.
It's in the movie.
Wow.
He was like, that was great. Moving on, you know, and it was like, and then a butterfly would fly through and he'd go, you know, and he'd be gone for 4 hours with this camera guy, like shooting a lizard. And then he'd see a spider. And then it was like, he was like a little kid.
Yeah.
He was like Adventure Time.
Yeah. Well, that falls under the keep, you know, always give a shit category though. Like he cared, you know?
Yeah. He did.
Right.
He did.
Totally.
Yeah.
This has been fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
This is just
much fun.
Yeah, this is fun.
We could do this forever. We do have one little segment that we promise won't take long.
Mm-hmm.
Our fans have some questions that we've compiled and we're going to ask them to you now.
Yeah.
If you choose to answer them, you don't have to.
After Rob plays the theme song, which you won't hear right now, but you'll hear later, Rob, play that theme song.
This is the part where Tina takes your questions and she writes them on her pad. Then she turns around and she asks the questions to the guest. And then the guest does their best to be a guest and answer your questions. It's the cock block.
Yeah.
Now, Tina,
all right, guys. Welcome to the KOC block of questions, the cock block. All right, Stephen Rick, we have a couple questions from our Patreon members. The first is from Melinda. Would you rather go to an amusement park or a national park?
National park.
National park.
I know that was loud. Sorry.
National park.
No, good answer. Yeah,
both national park. Both national
I like getting
park.
Close to the mic.
Okay. This one's a little bit harder from Emma.
National park.
Emma's wondering, what's a fun fact that you want people to know about you that they may not know?
Oh.
I'm obsessed with looking for arrowheads in fields by myself.
That's a perfect
like an old
answer.
Guy.
That's really
and I'm metal detect.
Do you?
Yes.
I was gonna say do you.
Oh, that's amazing. I can't believe I just said that. I feel so good.
Right.
It's freeing.
I was gonna say that of all the possible answers you could have given, that is shockingly honest.
That's amazing.
That was amazing.
Because you actually do spend a lot of time in the field looking for arrowheads.
I did it today.
I am really, really good at ping pong.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
Love
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. There you go. Nice. The gauntlet Rich, has been thrown down.
Rich, have you...
We could send you a picture of Rick and I as ping pong champs in the 70s.
Yeah. I am sure that I played ping pong with Rick because we had a ping pong table in the easy tent, which is where all the guys changed.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he beat me senseless, but it never stopped me from trying.
There was a lot of per diem was lost on that ping pong table.
Nice.
Okay, then here's my question. I know Tina has more questions, but Rick, who's a better ping pong player, you or Scott Grimes?
I think Scotty and I went to the mat a bunch of times. I think there's a lot of flip-flopping back and forth. Scott was pretty damn good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. Have
you had Scott on the show?
Well, no, but we're going to.
Apparently, you've never played this guy.
Yeah!
Thank God for the protective goggles.
Okay, I don't have one of both of us. That was Rick and I threw a party in Vancouver at a ping pong place.
Oh, you went to the ping pong bar. It.
Yeah.
Place is awesome.
I love that joint. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
And we were going to be partners, and then we thought, I'm okay at ping pong. He's better. But I was like, we would kill everybody. They're drunk.
Yeah, they were all wasted.
We would kill them.
Yeah.
We'd kill them.
Okay, last time I checked, you weren't exactly a teetotaler, Gomez. Were you abstaining?
Nah.
Like,
no, I was abstaining because we were throwing that party because nobody else would. So we actually did win.
We were wrangling a tournament of drunk people.
Yes.
Drunk crew people.
Yes.
Like, get you guys need to play on table three now. We were sober as judge.
Yeah, wow. Man. I think we had a pint of beer. Nice. The entire night. At the end of the night, we were like, God, we need to have a drink after this party. What the fuck happened?
Exhausted.
That looks hilarious.
Sober.
Nice.
All right, Tina.
All right, next question from Catherine. If you had to spontaneously give a 15-minute presentation on any topic, what topic would that be?
Oh, Steve, go ahead. Run with that.
A symposium? A what?
A presentation.
15-minute talk?
Some kind of like presentation. A TED talk.
A presentation? On the Battle of Perryville.
Oh, yeah. Battle of Perryville.
All right.
Yeah.
I'd do it on that.
kill
it.
I'd do it on something like, the long-term or short-term effects of ayahuasca.
Oh. Okay.
There you go.
All right,
there you go.
You know?
You would basically do a Sturgill Simpson album. Is like what
I would do a Sturgill Simpson album.
Nice.
As a symposium.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
By the way, you got Rob's attention.
Yeah. Let's go.
Can I attend this?
Let's talk about
it. We'll call I'm here it the for ayahuasca. The ayahuasca.
Yeah, the ayahuasca tapes.
Once every 10 years, I haven't.
Hey, listen, you got to find direction every. Yeah, man. Ready to go.
All right, next question. Miranda wants to know, if the four of you were in a band, musical, not Miranda Brothers, what would the name of the band be and what kind of music would you all play?
Double Goldenrod? Is that in the room?
Double Goldenrod's got to be the name of the band.
Goldenrod's good.
Double Goldenrod's good.
Pretty much like it.
And what kind of music?
It'd be like, I don't know.
Punk.
Angry country. I mean, what would it be, Rick?
Yeah, punk, punk country.
Punk country.
Country. Country. Country.
Kind of like a new
country.
Kind of
yeah,
country.
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 Yeah,
punk tree
which sounds like it's either like the study and the science of punctuation or a crazy country.
Punk-a-tree. I'm in a punk-a-tree club.
Hey, I changed my symposium.
I'm doing it on punk-a-tree.
Symposium's on punk-a-tree.
All right, and that segues nicely into our final question. And you guys can decide whether you want to combine your answers or each have your own. Yeah. But each guest gets to have Rob make them one song about any topic that you want and in any style of music. So you guys can go for your own song or you can collaborate with one.
This is my favorite part because it doesn't involve me at all. Yeah. I have to do nothing here.
I love this.
Yeah, this
you
is
kidding?
Great. I think we should
go to my Instagram.
I think, Rob, we should have an intro for
and make
the
up songs constantly.
Oh, yeah? That's what I do in this whole podcast. I insert little, jingles.
Musical interludes.
Yeah.
Vignettes.
I do. I
you guys should do a duet.
Yeah. Totally.
Steve's Instagram's got a birthday wish to my wife Jenny, and
to Jenny, and I did it. Yeah, I just did it in the moment.
This is the song. Just nowhere to go.
Yeah. No, it's pretty good.
Awesome. That's
pretty great. It really
I missed your birthday one day late. I'm never. It was like that.
One day late.
I got like a tune and then I just went.
and then that turns into I'm a dog.
I missed your birthday.
Dog.
I'm one day late.
Yeah,
that was
one
the
day
name.
One day late.
That's how I write mine.
Yep.
Okay, so.
So yeah, you got Rob would do a song. What Rob would do a song for you, Steve. So what would it be? What would be the topic and what would be the genre? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, what style?
Yeah, style.
Music.
Yeah.
Like for all of us?
No, just
like,
for you.
It could be anything.
For you guys.
Just for you, Steve. Just for you, Steve.
It's a special song.
Oh, just for me?
You.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or me and Rick?
Yeah. Well, it could be me and you together if you want.
Or just
yeah.
You, Steve.
Sure, let's do Rick and Steve.
We'll do Rick and Steve.
What would it be?
Plant Maters? Oh.
Plant and Maters.
Country?
Okay.
Plant
and Maters.
Yeah. Okay. And
Collards and Maters.
Okay.
Collards I put in my Maters yesterday.
Yeah. Maters
and my beans and my garlic.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's just some farm boys. There. Just some farm boys. I think it should be kind of bluegrassy, Steve. What do you think?
Yeah, why not? A little bluegrass.
Yeah, hey, Robbie, you haven't dusted off your bluegrass in a while.
There you go.
I'll do
Maters. Just called Maters.
Maters. Okay. That's the name of the song. Maters.
Might sound like people mating,
matter.
And that's where they get you.
Maters.
We get you in with
there's
the double entendre.
Maters.
It works. It works for
there's
this
little.
Stuff.
The little Maters.
Let me tell you something.
Maters.
When you have a band called
German Stripe Maters,
you give me the lyrics.
You have a band called Double Goldenrod and a song called Maters. You're gonna think it's dirty. I'm gonna tell you right now.
You got Double Goldenrod grown in those Maters. You got to pull them right away because they'll receive.
Still
and
sounds
you
dirty.
Won't have
still
maters.
Sounds dirty.
Oh
here.
Man. Oh, they you can't talk about reseeding with Goldenrod. Double Goldenrod.
No. Can't. Or you
double
or you can.
Kill it.
Yeah, or you can.
Choke out all your maters.
Well, howdy. We're the Double Goldenrods. And this is a song about maters. There's nothing I'd rather be doing today than planting maters. Sometimes they're as small as a bean or big as potatoes. But you can have them for supper or save them for later. Well, you may say yours are good, but mine are greater. We got big old maters and little maters. Sweet maters and sour maters. Cherry maters, Roma maters, planting maters.
Steve's on Rick Gomez. Thank you
guys.
You guys
are the best.
Robin,
you know,
thank you. Tina,
I'm a,
thank
you. I Rick Gomez's his biggest fan, and I knowing that Rick Gomez loves Steve Zahn makes me love Steve Zahn because you
yeah,
are
yeah, he's no
good judge of people.
Oh,
that's
puppy. Kurt.
That's
time.
Kurt.
Rich, that's Rich, Kurt. I feel the same way about you, dude. I love the hell out of you, and Rob the same. It was super fun to be on this, and thanks for having us.
Yeah, I love
yeah,
you guys.
Thanks, guys.
Big fan of you both. And
congrats on Tribeca. If anybody's in the New York area, go see their
film
at Tribeca
Film Festival.
Yeah,
try to snag a ticket and come check us out.
Yeah, man. I can't wait to see what you guys do in the future because
really
you're both.
Conversation.
Thanks,
yeah,
Steve.
Yeah,
thank you
fun,
so much.
Yeah.
Phenomenal artists, phenomenal storytellers. Can't wait to see what you guys do in the future. Thank you so much for being here.
Awesome.
Bye, dude.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Adios, my friends.
We'll come back on.
We'll see. Yeah,
please
we will
do.
Come
please.
Back on. Hell
yeah.
Yeah,
please
you
come back.
How about tomorrow?
Awesome. Yeah,
tomorrow.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's just
go enjoy your fire, Steve.
Yeah.
I will.
Make a fire.
I have to burn it now.
All right, we'll talk later.
All right,
bye, guys.
Thanks, guys.
All right, bye.
It's a king's car.